Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the Ravens' big win over the Bills, and specifically the defense. Joining us again is Childs Walker of the Baltimore Sun. Childs, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Thanks again for having me. And as we said at the beginning of part one, it's fun to dissect the Ravens' best, most complete defensive performance of the season to date.
Yeah, if you want some really serious insider stuff, go back to part one and listen to Childs talk about a few things. First of all, the interview environment generally, which I think is a really interesting point you made, the kind of a schedule for interviews of the week, catching Harbaugh at the right time and on the right moment for a question and how important that is, the level of a relative, you know, vitriol that can be faced depending on when you ask a question, I think is important. You know, we talked about the Ravens' success at home in prime time, a lot of variation, and some of the things. Childs is apparently a enormous proponent of the dime as well, which is always fun to talk with people who were that. And so we certainly had our fun with that. In the first episode, we talked a little bit about the Ravens' pass rush, some of the packages otherwise used, and all sorts of things about this very complete Ravens defensive effort. Got a big week of Baltimore sports. We are recording now at 11 p.m. We're, what, about 16, 17 hours away at this point from the Orioles postseason opener.
Yeah, and are you going to be there? I'll be there working.
There playing. Yeah. but I'm taking a time off from football writing this week and football podcasting to get this done. So I will be short shrifting. I already short shrifted that defensive article, but we're You'll be there in the press box. Where is your seat in the press box, Childs? Are you in the first row or the second row?
Well, normally it's always hard to tell with the postseason because there's more people in there. So I would probably second or third row. Normally I'm in the second row. It's usually the BBWA, the Baseball Writers of America folks, claim the first row seats as they should, because they're every day and there is no beat that is a harder grind than Major League Baseball. So those guys deserve every little advantage that they can get. So I will happily take whatever perch they give me.
There you go. From my time in the press box, which was, you know, 15, 20 games a year way back when as a Stats Inc. scorer, it was a wonderful time always at Camden Yards. It was nice even before that at the old stadium. They had a pretty nice setup. And the one thing that was constant was they always served you crab cakes every night. So you got that. Have they still got that on the menu?
Not as much. And in the playoffs, they actually don't. They don't serve food in the cafeteria. They give you a meal voucher, so you're out with the fans trying to find the best stands. But I mean for anybody who has never done a tour of Camden Yards, the press box at Camden Yards is as good as it gets in terms of an intimate seat for the game. I mean, it's just incredible. And the sort of gallows humor among the press corps has always been, you know, when are they going to take this away from us and give it to some premium suite holders of some kind, as the Ravens did this year. We lost our press box at M&T this year, which was widely considered, if not the best in the league, right near the top of the list, because it was, you know, outstanding seats on the 50-yard line. We're now one level up and in the corner, like most press boxes in the league. And that's still, it's still pretty good, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I'm blessed to have the good seats, so I don't have this issue, and I also don't have press credentials, so that's something. But I'd always wondered about that. I'd always wondered is why are we spending money on the press when that's another potential source of revenue? And the Ravens obviously figured that out at this point.
you got your answer. That's the premium Blackwing suite now. So it's that's what's become of our former ground. But it's you know, in some ways I don't mind. In some ways I like the new view because it's almost like an all 22 view. Mm-hmm. So I do think there are some aspects of the game that you maybe see even better from where we are now. I mean, you know, you're not as up close on stuff. You don't see the sideline as well. You maybe don't see some of the pregame. You certainly don't see some of the pregame stuff as well. But in terms of actually seeing plays unfold, in some ways it's as good or better.
A lot of people will swear by end zone upper deck seats for right between the goalposts and being able to see offensive line play and whatnot. Right. I'm not one of those guys. So I like sitting at midfield.
Maybe I'm just trying to talk myself into it.
I'm wondering about that. Now, there's no obstructed view in the new press box. I did ask this question of some other people, but they mentioned that they didn't have any from their seat. Are there any, like, any of the seats compromised in any way in terms of a view of, say, a corner of the field or anything?
My seat is really good from that. So, I mean, I'm in the front row and that's, it's not a problem at all. They did have to sort of adjust it. I think after the first exhibition game, when they figured out that some of the seats that were maybe up against beams and stuff, some parts of the field would be harder to see. And I don't think they got the pitch of the second row of the press box quite oh. right. So it was very hard to see the whole field from where a lot of the Ravens PR staff sits, for example. So they had to adjust the height of that. And that seems to be better for the time being, though I believe it's still something they may adjust a little bit after this season when they've sort of taken in all their data from how it goes. But from our perspective, I mean, it still works perfectly well.
How many tiers do you have of it's two? So it's, I thought of it always as being two rows of seats in the Camden Yards press box. Maybe there is a third row that I'm just not aware of.
Yeah,
there is
a third row at Camden Yards and there was at Ravens. I think it's just two now, and they have, what they have is a lot more seating behind the field view seat. So if people want to go quieter, somewhere quieter to work where they have a little more space, and you know, you could still monitor on TV if the game is still going on, that there is that space, or if you know you want to go grab a bite to eat back there, so that's something that's a little different.
Okay, all right, very cool. Let's jump in and talk about some individual players in this game. So we had some great defensive performances. Who would you like to talk about first?
I guess I'll start with Nate Wiggins, just because I saw a real sort of narrative power to what happened with him, in that he had a really tough game the previous week. I mean, he was coming off a somewhat, I don't know, traumatic might be overstating, but I mean, a stressful situation where he was in a car accident, and that interrupted the start of his rookie year, and made some, you know, pretty bad mistakes the week before, as I know you wrote about. I mean, had the one big play, but it was a tough game. But they showed a lot of faith in him, had him on the field immediately against the Bills, and he stayed out there. I mean, he played almost 90% of the defensive snaps, and I thought held up extremely well. Had his best game as a pro. And we talked in the first part about, you know, what he sets up for them in terms of letting them play around with other players. If they trust him out on the perimeter against the top receiver, you know, what does that allow them to do with Marlon Humphrey, who's, you know, arguably their most versatile defensive back, or at least their most versatile cornerback. So I thought that was a big evolution. And I asked Harbaugh about that today. You know, why did they have the faith to sort of throw him out there against one of the best quarterbacks in the league in such a major way? And he said, you know, look, you have to do that with talented young players. We have no question about his ability. He didn't get down about the bad game. I mean, he came out and had a great week of practice. You know, they had one-on-one conversations about it, and he came away with total faith in the kid, and he proved to be worthy of it last night, I thought.
Yeah, I had the cycle of defensive coverage fouls in the game, right, against Dallas, which is tough. So I know Harbaugh had to probably have a come to Jesus meeting with him about that, in terms of what was going on. But just three targets for 5 yards. And you mentioned he played, you know, 90% of the snaps. So I think it was 51 snaps he played. Yeah, 51 snaps.
Right.
I don't know how many coverage snaps he had. I don't have that right in front of me here, but that's a lot of coverage snaps that he played to only give up 5 yards of passing.
Yep.
That per coverage snap number is very, very low. Not to mention the per target number is terrific. Thought he could have had a couple interceptions. The ball got away from him.
Yep. Kyle Hamilton actually made fun of him a little bit on the postgame podium. He said he left a little change on the field.
Yeah, that's right. So one kind of low and one kind of high, and he couldn't collect either ball, which is a shame. Somehow he got credit for one pass defense during the game, despite the fact that two interceptions kind of clanked off his hands
right
in this game. And he made another, I thought, really nice play in the end zone in coverage of Coleman, 35 yards towards the right side of the end zone. He leapt up for the ball. The ball actually, I think, went over both his hands and Coleman's hands, but he's right there. Perfect position, everything. Didn't get a PD on the play, and I don't think he should have. I don't think he touched the ball, but I thought it was a great coverage play. It was just negated by the accepted penalty on that the left guard Edwards,
right,
on that play.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I think we're seeing that he is gifted in the way that was promised. I mean,
right,
you're able to throw him out there in positions that you're not able to throw out most rookie cornerbacks, and he can hold his own.
That was what I really loved about him coming out of school, is that he was the best guy in this draft in terms of having physical talents, which are available in the metrics and whatnot. And you want to see that are corroborated by on-field coverage talents. And right, that's where you don't always see that one for one. Devin Witherspoon from a year before had it in spades. And most of the rest of the guys, or a lot of the other guys, didn't. So and some of them are short on the athletic side, and some of them are short on the you know, yards per target side as it comes out. But Wiggins had it both, and he was my number one cornerback in the draft. I'm so happy the Ravens got him at number 30. Do you think that the Ravens might have had him as their number one cornerback? Or do you think they had other guys ahead of him?
I mean, they certainly sold it as if they did. I can't say that for absolute certain, but I mean, I would say if not one, probably then two. And I mean, I certainly think he was the one they had their eye on as their pick was coming near, because of exactly what you said. I mean, they know that's just not an easy set of tools to find. There aren't a whole lot of guys like that in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So if you can get one, and certainly if you can get one near the bottom of the first round that you can plug for a number of years, that's a big deal to your defense.
Yeah. All right. Very excited about him. I'm going to talk a little bit about Marlon Humphrey, because I think what we saw from Marlon was really exceptional in this game. And he is quietly having a remarkable year, because if you talk about the Ravens pass defense this year, I think you generally get negativity that it hasn't been a particularly good game. And this was a great game against Allen. People would admit that, but going into this game, they'd allowed a lot of yards. Some of that is game script. You know, the two teams, Dallas and Las Vegas, had to come back against the Ravens. That necessitates a lot of turnover risk in exchange for yards, so that they piled up a bunch of yards. Mahomes, of course, did very well against the Ravens in the first week as well. So just some legitimate concern, and some of it is game script. Marlon Humphrey has been an island in this. So far, he's allowed 3.91 yards per target on 23 targets. That's not a small number of targets. He's been tested a lot. Some ways that's good, some ways it's bad, but basically I think it's good. To put that in a framework for you, I mean, I obviously know it would be great if you could give up only 3.91 yards per pass play, but Jalen Johnson of Chicago led the entire NFL last year with 3.90 yards per target in 50 total targets for the year. So Humphrey's in some way, he's already kind of halfway home to that number. Ronald Darby was fifth in the entire NFL, and he was just over 5 yards per target. So this is a great number that Humphrey is on. He is having an amazing year to start off with. Certainly Pro Bowl caliber, consideration for all pro caliber as to where he is right now.
Well, and you add on top of that, what we talked about in the first part, what, you know, the impact he made as a pass rusher last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, the physicality that you see from him out on the perimeter and not letting, you know, not letting short passes turn into bigger gains. I mean, you know, we've always known he's not coverage is not where it ends with him. I mean, you know, he is a stout guy. He's willing to mix it up. But we're seeing all facets of his game right now.
Yeah. Little not upset about the penalty, because honestly, it didn't really matter that much, but it's the kind of thing it probably didn't need to happen. And I don't think it certainly didn't help the Ravens cause in the game. Probably didn't hurt them that much either, but I'd prefer not to see it. I'd prefer not to have it be part of the statistics. In the first half, I thought Ricard actually being on the other end of that. I don't think it was dangerous. Not really in terms of Patrick. He's a tough guy, you know, got kneed in the face basically by the number 94. Who was that? 94. I can't remember, but anyway,
I don't remember.
Yeah. But just an unnecessary roughness foul that didn't need to happen in Marlon's case.
Yeah. I think the coaches would agree with you.
All right. Harbaugh, you've been there for the recent Harbaugh interviews. Harbaugh, I think a week ago, gave his most measured, honest, and yet passive aggressive description of the Ravens penalty problems that he possibly could give. And I think it touched all the bases in terms of that. But I want to hear your opinion on this, because I thought he really said basically the explanation from what we got from Tolbert was crap on the not the roughing the passer. What was it? The non-call of a safety. And we need a better explanation from the league. But he didn't exactly use that words. It was more like, maybe I can't understand, but the rule may have a loophole that they don't really intend to be there. But by, you know, he, what he's really saying is, give me a good explanation. Give me a good explanation for that. At least that's how I take it.
Well, that was a big one. But I mean, there were certainly a number of significant calls over the first 3 weeks that they felt went against them that made no sense and really did play a part in their troubles. And so, I mean, I think the way that he put it, he probably didn't go quite this far, but I mean, I think he was certainly not happy with their discipline in this area. He also felt like they were getting a bum draw.
He did. I believe the way he stated it was, when we can't see the penalty, we'll send it to the league. But there's we got too many penalties, and you know, we've got to make that a point of emphasis. And I'm paraphrasing it slightly too, but I think it was the best way they could put it. What I wanted to basically get you to explain to people, because of your insider nature on this, is who do you think looked at what his response was going to be to that question? Or do you think he came straight from the hip in terms of going through those various bullet points that he did in that presser last Monday, talking about, you know, first of all, the explanation from Tolbert, second of all, the some penalties we're going to send to the league, others we're going to really take it upon ourselves to fix.
When you say who looked at it, what do you mean? Are you talking about internally or?
Internally, I'm wondering what is their process? Do you have any sense of did they get their Chad Steele, or even if they brought back Kevin Byrne to have a discussion on this kind of thing? Do you think it's only the coaches and maybe the general manager who talk about it? Who do you think is involved in that kind of a dynamic to make sure that a communication is done properly?
I think that they all talk about it. I do think he ultimately has pretty complete leeway in terms of what message he's going to put out on an issue like that. However, and he's also a person who has a good bit of standing in the league, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he's a person who could comment on league issues, and you know, he would be taken seriously. So, I mean, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think in terms of process, I mean, he certainly has a talk with Chad Steele before anytime he goes up to talk to us. Yep. So, I mean, they're bouncing ideas back and forth on what they think we're going to ask and what are going to be the main talking points. So, I mean, he certainly has his sounding boards before he gives his message to us, but I've never found that he struggles with what he wants to say, especially about the penalty issues. I mean, that's something where he usually won't say a whole lot about it in the post game press conference, because to some degree, you know, he may have only seen the play, you know, a couple of times, and he doesn't want to shoot from the hip without full information. But after he's had the day and he talks on Monday, I mean, I've never found him to be overly cryptic. I mean, you don't have to do a ton of reading between the lines to see when he thinks the call was nonsense and hurt them unfairly. But when they're having penalty problems, he is also going to go into the take responsibility mode, you know, and it starts with me, and it has to be a major teaching point throughout the week. I mean, so I find his messages on these points to be pretty consistent over the years.
All right. Great. I think it's your turn. You want to talk about another player?
Oh, another player. Let's talk about Adafe Owe. I mean, certainly Kyle Van Noy is, and who I imagine we'll talk about soon, is getting the bulk of the attention among the edge rushing group just because of the incredible production. I mean, the big plays in games, and you know, from a narrative standpoint, you know, he came back from the fractured orbital to play some of the best football of his career. Owe, I wouldn't say quietly, because he's also made one of the biggest offensive plays in the game last night when he finished off that 16-yard sack on Josh Allen that kind of put the Bills to sleep for good. And he has had much more success finishing pass rush plays this year than he had in the past. But it still feels like it's flying a little bit under the radar, because, I mean, I think he's been really productive in every game. I mean, to the point where, you know, you're talking about he's probably playing at a Pro Bowl level right now, or certainly a borderline Pro Bowl level. I mean, you know, you never know whether he's going to get that kind of attention, but if you watch him, I mean, he's making impacts on a lot of plays, even when he's not getting sacks, and he's getting more sacks this year. I mean, so they did make a bet on him in the offseason, picking up the option. I mean, I don't think that was a hugely controversial move, but it wasn't a totally obvious move either. And he's really paying that off right now, to the point where, you know, we talked in the previous section about, you know, how do they prioritize guys that they want to extend this offseason? And I think if he's not at the top of that list, he has to be near the top of it, just because those types of players are so hard to find and develop.
Yeah. First of all, completely agree. I think he'll be there. Unbelievable impact on the game. There's really only one play I think he would point to that he got away from is Knox kind of beat him on the left edge on the 3-yard touchdown run they had. Not a big deal. That touchdown was probably going to happen no matter what. Yeah. But it's that was a little unfortunate. Other than that, he was in the backfield, and of all the players the Ravens have got, I think he's benefited the most from Chuck Smith, probably. And you know, Van Noy is a different player than he's been at any time in his previous career. He's never been this sort of a pass rusher.
Right.
But I think that what we've seen from Adafe Owe in terms of having an A minus spin move now, or I don't like everybody an A or an A plus, or it's just overstating the thing, versus a B minus spin move before, I think it's a notable difference.
Well, I think he would be the first to say that he needed that coming out of college. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he was an impactful player at Penn State, but he wasn't as impactful a player as you might think based on his physical gifts. And he knew he was still a developmental player coming into the NFL, and he's a serious guy. He works hard, but I mean, I think he would say he needed to be paired with the people who could really teach him those finishing points. And we're starting to see that.
Yeah. Five pressure events in this game as I scored it. One of those was lost. It was a negated sack zero where he actually just ran Allen to the sideline. So his role in that sack was secondary, we'll call it. But still, he lost it to a holding call, and that was unfortunate. I'm sure he would have probably rather the Ravens declined that penalty. He'll be back on the thing. But exciting, and he really seemed to be too much for the guys he faced in this game. Really appreciate his quickness and what he brings to this defense. He's a nice two-gap inside stunter, so he's a guy who goes from outside shoulder of the tackle into the A-gap fairly frequently. That's been terrific. When it's worked out, it's really, really looked great. And he's a guy who's, as I think you've alluded to already, is converting more of his pressures into sacks and quarterback hits than he ever has.
Yep.
All right. Let me bring up a different player. I've got to bring up Travis Jones, because we got to have a talk about him. I'm going to go for the statement that'll get people's attention right off the bat. And people know how much I love Pernell McPhee and Haloti Ngata and a lot of other interior linemen who had an unbelievable first step. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Tim Adams to get between linemen and cause trouble, command double teams, force them to occur. Travis Jones is the best of that class since Permanil McPhee 2014 right now. Okay, and he might be better than McPhee. McPhee that year piled up numbers, drove the pass rush that is largely people point to Suggs and Dumervil as generating all that pass rush. It wasn't them at all. I mean, those guys took advantage of the situation, had tons of one-on-one matchups, but it was Pernell McPhee that drove that pass rush with his interior command of double teams. And this year, I think we're seeing the same thing from Travis Jones. Had an incredible game this game. 7 pressure events, as I count it. Now, 2 of them didn't count. One was negated, and the other was the quarterback hit, which is not really a quarterback hit on the sack fumble. But was a terrific play nonetheless. If it had occurred earlier during the game and Josh Allen had returned looking the way he did, I think it could have really altered a close game if it had happened.
Yeah. I mean, just in terms of the big picture, I mean, we know how precious interior pass rushers are in the NFL, and they already have one of a different style in Matabike, mm-hmm. but to now really have 2, and Travis Jones is a completely different kind of player than Matabike. I mean, you talk about the double teams. I mean, whenever people have sort of asked me what Travis Jones could be, I do kind of go to Nada in my head, just because of the combination of just awesome physical stature and athleticism. I mean, I don't think they're exactly the same kind of player, but that's kind of the comp that jumps to mind. But I mean, he just kind of leaves wreckage in his wake out there. I mean, and we saw it, you know, again, you don't get the complete sense of that during camp because it's not full go. Mm-hmm. But you certainly got the sense that this was brewing, and, you know, you heard it over and over from other players on the team, from coaches. I mean, you know, they were certainly very excited about him coming into this year, and this felt like the year when he would get ahead of Pierce in terms of being the number one guy in there. But you see it on the field now, and I mean, he's just, there's 3 or 4 plays a game where that just kind of blow you away in terms of, there's not a whole lot of athletes who can do that stuff.
Yeah, we had Brent Urban on the show last year, the year before, whichever it was. I asked him about stunts and crossing the face of a player, basically, and trying to go, because he's a very long armed guy, into the, you know, a guard, say, who's across the center's face or the other way around. And he said, I can't really do that. I always have to go with 2 arms first, establish, you know, my leverage, and then go to 1 arm from there to be longer than 2. And he said, the guy who could do that, the guy who has seen do that, is Travis Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got the impression that one of his arms, and you see him at the podium, the guy's enormous. I mean, he's huge. It's like sticking a telephone pole into the chest of an opposing guard or center to see what the guy's capable of with 1 arm. And that, of course, that's a lot. I mean, if you're playing with 1 arm, hand placement is so important for any lineman. And when you see it on edge rushers, the really great ones, you don't even see their hands so much. What you see is the tackle flailing because they can't get any purchase on that pass rusher. as they're moving around them. But you don't even really notice where the Pat Liatu Latu or somebody like that, where their hands are as you're watching them and you're doing scouting. With Jones, he's just it's not subtle where his hands are going and how he's getting. He's just remarkably powerful.
And I guess I will be interested to see how quickly kind of the broader football world wakes up to it. Because if you just look at the very superficial stats, I mean, they're still not going to blow you away. Right. And maybe they never will, because I mean, as you've suggested, so much of his value is taking on those double teams and wreaking havoc nonetheless, which is enormously valuable to the overall shape of the defense. Doesn't necessarily lead to having 8 or 10 sacks a year. Probably won't. Right. But people inside the building certainly understand how good and important he is. And I think that will only become more of the case as the season goes on.
No, hopefully the first chance they get to negotiate him is after this season. He has to get through 3 years right. of service, and they could extend him right away and give him the treatment that Lardarius Webb and others have gotten in terms of the early signing. I think it would make a lot of sense. And I would put him right up there. I don't even know. A lot of it is who's the agent you're dealing with in terms of either Oway or Jones, but Jones would be very high on my list, even though it means paying for a second interior lineman. I did want to get to one question here because I think this is very closely related. Zach Serpa Weinberg, appreciate your question. He said, I noticed live at least one play, possibly more, where Oway and Matabike lined up on the same side, but with Matabike outside Oway. Was there something matchup specific you think they were targeting, or might that be a pass rush package we see going forward? Do you want to start with that? I've got an answer for it, but if you want to start with that, I can hold off for a sec.
I mean, I just know that more broadly, they really believe that Matabike can be a highly productive player when used that way on occasion. So certainly not surprised when it pops up in games. And I mean, I think that I believe the numbers bear that out, if you get him outside, he can be very effective. So, I mean, just, you know, kind of in terms of what we were talking about earlier, you know, the importance of showing different looks throughout a game and then week to week. I mean, that certainly plays into that. So, I mean, it's not surprising, and I do think we'll continue to see it.
Yeah, I'll maybe add one more thing to that, Zach, is the notion that Matabike really is a one-on-one pass rush winner. He is a nightmare for one guy to handle. He's quick and powerful, and he's built like a big ball of muscle, from top to bottom. But he wants to try and beat one guy. And like you see with Chris Jones, like you see sometimes with Aaron Donald moving all over, like with a lot of great interior pass rushers, they get moved to the edge and given some opportunities out there as well to make one-on-one wins. If you do get a chance to double him on the inside, you're probably reducing his value. It's kind of like playing Kyle Hamilton on the back end. It's not like he's not still a valuable player, but he's not as impactful as he could be. We have him up close to the line of scrimmage. So Matabike, I love it when they manufacture one-on-one opportunities for him. And I love it when they manufacture cases where Travis Jones crosses a face and has to be doubled, because I think that the opportunities that creates for the three other guys on the line of scrimmage is where you really see the payoff from it.
Yep.
All right. I think it's your turn. Travis Jones was my guy.
Yeah. I guess we can go ahead and clean up Van Noy, because I mean, he was probably the defensive MVP of the game. I mean, and we haven't gotten all the way in on him yet. And, again, you said earlier, and you're absolutely right. I mean, he hasn't ever really been this kind of player before in his career. And it is kind of remarkable to see that at the point where he is. I mean, you think about when they signed him last year. I mean, yes, they needed edge help, but the sense was this was a versatile veteran guy who they could sort of move around as needed. I mean, I don't think anybody was thinking that, he was going to be, a double digit sack, highly productive pass rusher. I mean, but he said this very early on when we started to talk to him, and he has maintained the same line throughout, and he's been proven correct. He said, look, nobody ever really asked me to play this way early in my career. This was not my job. He's like, I feel like I always had it in me. If this was what I was asked to do, wasn't what I was asked to do. Now that it is, and I can focus in on that, I have absolute confidence I'm going to be really good and productive in this role. And I mean, Ash, it's hard to argue. I mean, he's making a huge impact week after week.
Yeah, huge Sam linebacker signing, I thought at the time. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what they need. If they're right. not going to have Tyus Bowser, you know, they have another guy who can drop to coverage. He had, you know, 1,400 career coverage snaps or something. It was a large yep. number. Yep. And he had 22 and a half sacks over the previous 4 years. So just a little over 5.5, but less than 6 snaps per game that he'd been averaging per year. And he said 15 in what? 20 games as a Raven, or maybe not even that. I think it's more like 17 games as a Raven.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
it's close to a sack per game.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Just outrageous. I mean, he's level of play. And you mentioned we're going to clean up with Van Noy, and I thought, is he making a pun here? But no. Kyle Van Noy cleaned up a fair amount yesterday. And he's really been the beneficiary of some of those first pressures. He cleaned up one off Jones, though he was going to get there, and it looked like he was going to get him either way. Jones had the pocket nicely phone boothed for him. And I thought that some of the extended pressures he got to get the sack, it wasn't just other people helping him. I mean, he really, I thought, kind of disrupted the pitch itself on what ended up being the sack fumble.
Oh, he absolutely yeah. did. I mean, he blew up that play. I mean, I don't know what you thought about that play. I watched it again today on the All 22, and I wasn't entirely clear what the Bills were hoping to accomplish with it. I guess they were trying to trick at least some of the defensive backfield into coming up to pay attention to Allen, and then maybe you get a cross break loose downfield. But I mean, the Ravens didn't bite on it at all, and then Van Noy was in there so quickly, and as you said, almost made the play before Allen even got the ball, and mm-hmm. really just immediately, you know, blew up the whole thing. But I mean, it was but yeah, I mean, when Harbaugh talked about him today, he said he's just playing so hard. I mean, you know, he doesn't he's not giving up on plays. I mean, you know, if it is a situation where he has to pursue the quarterback all the way to the sideline, I mean, he's going all out. And I mean, it's impressive to see. And I mean, and he did talk about, you know, maybe that means we have to manage his workload as the season goes on a little bit, you know, and that may show up more in terms of how much he practices than how much he plays in games, just because, you know, he's a guy who doesn't need a lot of practice reps to stay in game form. So, I mean, that's something we see a little bit more as the game goes on, but I mean, as the season goes on, but it's impressive.
I've been really impressed with his ability to do a lot of things. He's a good backside patient, backside containment guy on run plays. So if they're not really blocking him on the backside run play, he knows to not over pursue that play, just to close down space and do a good job with that. Great on screen passes. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the guys you can really trust. So there's nobody like Chuck Slugs.
Yeah, yeah. That was the all time. Yeah. My favorite was when somebody tried to get Suggs on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. He certainly had some moments there, but Van Noy's been terrific on that. And one of the things that showed up, and I think why he was so quick on the play with Allen, is he's an incredible backside defender on the boot. I mean, he recognizes mm-hmm. it right away when it's coming mm-hmm. and that play, if you want to limit the boot, it's all on the backside edge defender. They've got to get downhill quickly, get after the quarterback and limit usually him to the level one option before 2 and 3 can develop. And then if you get the quarterback passing level one, you've already won. You know, they might get a 5-yard completion, but they're not going to get a big completion out of the deal. And you might get a turnover or a sack or, you know, some other bad thing to happen to the quarterback if you're really playing through that. And Van Noy's been very good. And this was one of those instances where it was strange. I thought it was just going to be a direct run by Shakir on the play when he lined up to do it, because mm-hmm. Allen was so far off the line of scrimmage. But I guess I should have figured that meant that there's a possibility Allen was going to get the ball.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how terrible it would have been if they had just, you know, if part of understanding what happened to happen on that play was for the corner on that side to come downhill after Allen. Cause that would have, I think, made it very difficult for them to get that play off for any meaningful effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So if I know it was your guy, right? Well, let's talk about Kyle Hamilton since we didn't talk about him yet. I think he's the last guy that I really kind of feel like we need to talk about. I thought great tackling game from Kyle in this one. It mentioned the first show, he really wasn't playing big nickel anymore. He was playing dime and he was playing strong safety on the mostly deep in this game. But he continues to be the tackler they need him to be. And when even the one tackle he missed, he bubbled Cook 3 yards into the backfield, which made it possible for Jackson to come up and still make the tackle for a 1 yard loss. Hardly a costly missed tackle. So if you're looking at your PFF grades and you see an orange or red number on Kyle Hamilton for tackling, and I haven't looked yet, but to know if this is true or not, that missed tackle would be not a bad one in my case. That would be probably a good missed tackle.
I would be interested to hear from you if you feel like when you look at the four games as a body of work, if he has not been quite as impactful this year as he was last year, what are the differences?
Okay. I think he's probably taken a small step backwards for starters. There was some indication, and then he showed up on the injury report, that he'd been playing hurt, particularly in the game against Oakland. Did you guys ever get any better idea around the building and what was going on with that?
I mean, we talked to him about it directly, and he tends to be, I would say, one of the more candid guys, especially in talking about injuries. And I mean, he said it was never anything that was a big deal that was going to keep him from playing, but he dealt with a succession of things from midway through camp on through the preseason and then into the first couple of weeks of the season where, again, it was nothing that would keep him out of a game, but I don't think he was 100%. I mean, you know, he was on the injury report with a back injury. I mean, I think there were a few times in games where you would see him either favoring his shoulder or his back, where he did not look entirely comfortable after making contact. So, and I don't think we've seen that as much the last 2 weeks. So, I mean, he is at playing better seemingly as he's healthier. So that's certainly a promising sign going forward. So, I mean, he didn't get deep into it, but I think he was a little frustrated with it, 'cause he felt like there was a 6 week period there where it was just kind of one little thing after another. And he just didn't quite get the launch into the season that he wanted or expected.
You know, more generally, the Ravens have a ton of defensive playmakers. They are blessed with a broad array of guys who know where the football is, know where the football is going to be, know what the opportunities are to punch a football loose, know where they need to be to get a football off the ground. All of that, Kyle Hamilton has all of those skills. Second man of the ball skills, fall on the ball skills, pick it up and run with it skills, pick it out of the air skills. Marcus Williams is, you know, has that in spades. Roquan Smith has it. Marlon Humphrey has it. Although, you know, you mentioned earlier that you know, ball skills are not the very top of Marlon's game, but he's certainly it's still an important part of what he does. I look at this team, and the one problem I have more generally than just Kyle Hamilton is they're not getting enough interceptions for the number of passes defense that they have. So they've had two more in this game. I think they had about an 8-1 relationship going in. And the normal, you know, would be about 4.5 or 5-1. That's not cast in stone, and it's such a small sample size, it's really hard to really find fault with it. But the only two teams after 3 weeks who had more PDs than the Ravens are third in the league, had 5 interceptions each, and the Ravens only had 2.
Yeah.
So you're not raising alarms over this thing yet. You're just kind of pointed out as a trend worth watching is, can the Ravens do a little bit more with getting their hands on the football and converting those? And then we see Wiggins drop a couple in this game. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate.
Well, and I think there was a feeling that if they were going to regress a little bit from last year, that might be a big part of the reason, because they were so good at that last year. So good at creating takeaways. And we know that's a volatile statistic season to season. So we'll see. But I mean, certainly they seem to have a lot of players out there who you would expect to convert more of those chances. So, I mean, as you said, it doesn't feel like something that shouldn't resolve itself at some point.
Yeah, I think that's the way to look at it. And I think game script will help resolve it more. If the Ravens are leading or forcing the other team to pass at key moments in the game where they have to make more risky passes, then they're more likely to get these turnovers. If you force more teams into third downs that they have to convert late in games, then you got a chance for sack fumbles, you know, all of that. I think it will tend to resolve itself. So I'm, I guess like you, not really concerned about it.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if there's anything else in the mailbag. And then let's see. Okay, now this is good. So this is from A Bits. He says, I know he had only a handful of snaps, so I'd like to hear your thoughts on Adisa Isaac and how you see him being used the rest of the season. So didn't come in this game until the second half, and then he had a handful of snaps, but it was his first activation. Came in for the first time on the last drive of Q3 and ended up, by my count, playing about 14 snaps. I might be different because of penalties by one from how the game book has it. But what did you think about his play?
I thought he did. I mean, I will say I didn't sort of zero in on every one of his reps. I did think he did pretty well with the limited amount of work that he had. And just again, more broadly speaking, I mean, it's always good to see a young player who's had some bad luck at the very beginning of his career just get out there. And, you know, I mean, you saw him, I saw him in the locker room afterward. And I mean, you know, he looked like a happy guy. He looked like a weight and lifted to some degree, right? Because it's like, it's finally starting. Your career is really starting. And that is a milestone. And I think he's done well when he's been healthy so far. I mean, I think they certainly liked him through the summer. And I mean, when we were talking to Harbaugh at the end of last week on Friday about where Ngakoue was with his ramp up and, you know, when he might be available, Harbaugh said, you know, I'm optimistic from a physical standpoint that he'll be ready pretty soon. But he also said, you have to remember, we have a bunch of young pass rushers that we like, and we want to keep giving them chances. That is also a priority, you know, sort of basically saying, you know, just because we signed Ngakoue as a potential value, that doesn't mean we want to take snaps away from, I mean, the more obvious ones are, I mean, clearly always not going to lose snaps, and they want to keep Ajabo in the mix. And he had a nice moment last night, but mm-hmm. you know, Adisa Isaac is another person in that chain. And, you know, he was very pointedly saying we don't want to stand on his development. So I would take that as a positive sign for him that he will keep getting some chances. And if he does well with them, there will be more.
He did a great job of chasing down the play for -4. I love high motor plays. So yeah. when pass rushers don't give up on the moment or you know, even on a run play where you're being blocked and you don't give up mm-hmm. on it and you chase it down, that's always very positive. I did have him for one pressure, and then I went back and looked at it again, and Ajabo and he looked more similar than I thought. And they you know, both their numbers end in zero, and unfortunately, yeah. unfortunately, it was fortunate for Ajabo, but it was unfortunate for Isaac. Yeah, had the pressure. So anyway, it was a good moment for Adisa to get on the field. All right, I think that'll do it for tonight's show. Really appreciate you joining me, Childs. Tell folks one more time where they can find your work, and maybe if they want to contact you online, where they could do that.
Yeah. All my articles will pop up on BaltimoreSun.com. You can, you know, follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter, just at Childs Walker. You know, I will usually post links to my stuff there as well. And if you send me questions there, I will try to answer them. And that's those are the places.
All right. Make sure you look at Child's pregame, his previews, which I'm told for the first time come out on Thursday, not on right. Sunday, right. where I've always read them. And right. then also his five things we learned from the game, which is it's out on Tuesday in the paper, in print, right?
Tuesday in the paper. And it'll be, it's up 5 a.m. on Monday morning after a Sunday game. So that meant a quick turnaround last night.
that's still great, and it's that's always good reading. It's one of the articles I look forward to every week. Other folks out there, really appreciate y'all. Everything you've done to promo the show. One thing we always ask is if you feel like writing a 50-word five-star review, please do that on your favorite podcast platform. Otherwise, always interested in you using hashtag film study mailbag. Please do that, and we'll get to those when we can. Childs, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Ken, and look forward to the next time.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.